Motor vehicle crashes, falls, homicides, domestic violence, child abuse and neglect, and drug overdoses are just some of the tragedies that we hear about every day in communities and on the news. Injuries and violence are widespread in society, but they need not be accepted as fate or as part of life. The fact is that most events resulting in injury, death, or disability are predictable and therefore preventable. May is Trauma Awareness Safety Month, and the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control, which is part of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has as its mission to prevent injuries and violence and reduce their consequences so that every American can live his or her life to their fullest potential. Joining us this morning to tell us more about this effort to raise public awareness and action regarding injury prevention and control is Steve Atkinson, a trauma outreach coordinator for the Upstate Trauma Service. Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. So what is the point of the message that CDC and other organizations have about injury prevention? What's their general message?
The general message is pretty simple. When you look at trauma is the leading cause of death in the first four generations of any person's life. And the really sad thing about it, unlike things like heart disease and diabetes, which you can prevent or mitigate your chances of getting, trauma is 100% preventable pretty much across the board, just dependent on the choices we make and the prevention that we initiate.
So basically, there are so many ways we can become injured. Let's talk about what those are, you know, and I kind of gave a big overview in the introduction. What are some of the ways, what are some of the areas that we need to be aware of or look out for?
Well, traumatic injury breaks down into three basic categories. There's two major, one more minor. The first one's penetrating trauma. That's anything that pierces you, gunshot wounds and knives being the classic examples of that, but it can be anything, foreign object. Then there's blunt trauma, which is typically the more deadly of the two, which are things you would sustain in falls, which are pretty much a national epidemic. Then there are things like car accidents, blunt trauma from assault. And then the other one that's the other traumatic injury are thermal injuries from cold and burns, which aren't as big as killers as the first two, but definitely, pardon me, rank in that pantheon of injuries.
Well, you mentioned, though, that falls are a national epidemic. Tell us about that.
You know, when you look at the data from the National Trauma Database, and the CDC has identified, you know, in 2011, it's one of the largest injury demographics that we have out there. You know, most adults over the age of 65, one in three adults are going to fall at some point in their lives. And of those that fall, two out of three will fall again in 6 months, sustaining moderate to severe injury. And with an aging population, this is a huge healthcare burden. And there's a lot that can be done for prevention and education to prevent that type of injury.
And that's really the effort that you're engaged in right now. It seems to me from what you've just said that since you feel that most all of these kinds of injuries being sustained by violence and accidents can be prevented, then clearly the key is education.
Education is one of the big things.
Yeah.
You know, preventing the accident before it happens. That's the whole thing, preventing and educating.
Why has the CDC become involved in this? And you mentioned some other, at the break before, you mentioned some other organizations that you're involved with.
Well, the CDC is, as you know, is tasked with prevention and education. You know, they identify the trends, and then they look at those things and how we can do it. So anything that affects the national health scene like that, the CDC is definitely going to be involved in. Mm-hmm. So trauma is a huge health problem across the country.
So you mentioned that motor vehicle safety obviously is another big piece of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. So what are they attempting to do in terms of, you know, having the public understand what they need to do? I mean, what kinds of campaigns and things are they engaged in, especially during the month of May or June? Because I understand that June is National Safety Month as well.
Yeah, you'll most likely see a variety of TV and radio commercials that raise awareness. Many different organizations like the Society of Trauma Nurses, American Trauma Society, the American College of Surgeons, all have their individualized efforts too to educate. There's things that we do here on the local level too, because when we look at even here on local level here in Syracuse, automobile trauma, blunt trauma is basically the biggest part of our business. Biggest part of the patient population that we see. So we raise awareness here locally for automobile safety through programs like Let's Not Meet by Accident, where we take high school age children, We sit them down in the trauma room. We talk to them about the consequences of bad decision making and what will happen when you come to the trauma center, and talk to them about good decision making and how to prevent ever having to come to the hospital and meeting us by accident per se. So you'll see a lot of those efforts across the board. We've done a really good job with that, too. When you think about a seatbelt safety awareness, airbags, there's really been a very successful push to educate people on that.
Yeah, I was actually listening recently, and they were talking about that there's going to be a real crackdown, so mm-hmm. to speak, on the use of safety belts, seatbelts, that they're going to be watching people locally anyway to make sure that people are using their seatbelts.
You'll see an increase in road checks and things like that.
It seems amazing to me in this day and age that people still aren't always using their seatbelts.
I would like to say in a perfect world everyone would, but unfortunately we don't live in a perfect world. And I see, as a pre-hospital provider too, I see a lot of people that don't use their seatbelts properly. They'll wear them in a variety of ways that they'll actually cause more injury if they're not put on correctly. So the effort is not only to educate people to wear them, but to wear them correctly.
And then, of course, the new problem with motor vehicle safety has more to do with texting and phone usage, I know you have a very strong feeling
about. Very strong. It's the new plague, you know. We've done a great job since the late 70s and early 80s in educating people while drinking while driving. But when you text and drive, studies show that you're 3 times more impaired than if you're over the legal limit. Your attention's completely off the road. We see it on Oprah. We see it nationally. It's killing young people. Hand over fist. I mean,
Young people, but also they can engage with other cars and vehicles of other people. So they're a danger on the road to all of us.
I tell kids when I educate them, you're driving basically a 3,000-pound bullet when you're in a vehicle. It's a huge energy delivery device. It can cause tons of destruction. When they're behind the wheel, and usually they drift. When they're texting, they'll drift into the oncoming lane, and that's the big destruction.
Well, I'm going to have you hold that thought because we have to take a short break. We'll be back to talk a lot more about very specific kinds of injuries that we can prevent. But please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYL. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with my guest, trauma coordinator Steve Atkinson, and we're talking about injury and safety prevention. Well, before the break, we were talking a little bit about different kinds of injuries. Let's talk a little bit specifically about the kinds of things that you see coming to the Trauma One Center that happen at home.
Upstate, as the Level 1 Trauma Center for the region, all serious injuries come to us. And we see a wide variety of them. The things that we see from the home, primarily you're going to see things like falls.
Which we talked about. But you see
violent crimes.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No. I just wanted to ask you, here in Central New York, do you see a lot of falls? Do we have falls
because
the weather and the ice and the snow? And
yeah, we do. We see a lot of falls. And with children, we see injuries from concussions, whether they're skating, whether they're bicycling, whatever they're doing, rollerblading without helmets. So we see a lot of concussion injuries from things like that here in the children's hospital, too. Mm-hmm.
And obviously, helmet safety is a big piece of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, helmet safety. There again, like we mentioned earlier, almost all trauma is preventable just by the choices we make. And the simple thing like wearing a helmet could prevent major head injury, which when you look at it, the sad thing about head injury is we can't fix it. We can only manage it. Brain tissue doesn't regenerate, and the effects of a head injury are cumulative over time. So a little concussion now and then a big concussion later, those things add up over time. So a simple thing like wearing a bike helmet or a ski helmet will save a child's brain. It's a brain saver, and you won't see that deleterious effect over time.
What other kinds of things? I know that you've been very involved in having almost a campaign to give away helmets and have kids be aware that they need to wear them. And obviously there's been a lot of talk lately about sports injuries vis-a-vis concussions, and there's a lot more consciousness about that these days.
Yeah, awareness has really been raised. I mean, there's been a couple prominent athletes that have sustained concussions, and I'm seeing more and more in the kids that I deal with in the community, in a lot of the high schools now and even lower levels, if a young athlete is concussed, they usually bench them for a long period of time. And if more than once, they usually get pulled permanently because we're understanding more and more now that concussion now can come back to haunt you later.
It sounds to me like that there's so many ways in the home and in recreational circumstances that you can sustain injury, that safety and awareness of safety and safety precautions are crucial before you engage in some of these behaviors. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm thinking about motorcycling or snowmobiling and those kinds of things. As you said, the proper gear, checking your equipment. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other things you would recommend?
Well, you know, what they say is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Anything you're going to engage in, if there's risk of injury, there's not a sport out there, there's not an activity that hasn't had safety equipment designed for it. If you go rock climbing, if you are bicycling and you're mountain biking in your local state park, snowmobiling, all these things, there's equipment designed specifically for the activity. Snowboarding, for instance, you'll notice there's a difference between snowboarding and bicycle helmets. They're designed to prevent different types of injury based on those activities. So any one of these, any one of the activities you're going to do, you can protect yourself from it. We don't want you to not have a good time. We don't want people to sit in their homes as hermits just waiting not to be injured. You know, go out there and have a good time, but mitigate the risk. Mitigate the risk, wear the proper safety equipment. Helmets, is, like we said before, is a huge one. But in the home, safety things, we talked a little bit about drowning, water injuries, things like that. And 'tis the season, you know, we're coming up on our three whole sunny months of time here in upstate New York. So,
sadly.
Pools are opening and things of being aware, especially young kids. Young kids can drown in a very shallow amount of water, usually because they have larger heads, they topple over. Having the proper fences around pools, making sure when kids are swimming that they're supervised, that they have the proper flotation devices on. People will be engaging in water sports now. They're going to be out there water skiing. You still should be wearing a helmet water skiing. It almost seems counterintuitive, but you can still injure your head by hitting the water at velocity. You should be wearing the proper flotation device because you get hurt, you're going to go down. The risk of drowning is high. And also the responsible use of alcohol when people are out on boats. It's still a motor vehicle. You still can be impaired. You can still cause catastrophic damage with a boat. Just because you're in the middle of the lake doesn't mean you're immune to harm.
It strikes me also things like diving, being sure mm-hmm. that whatever body of water you're diving into, you've got a clear passage.
Yeah. And there again, that's just prevention. That's knowing your environment, not going on and not diving into that murky pond because you don't know that there's a stone 6 inches under the water and you're going to top load your spine and cause a high cord injury.
Horrible. Yeah, and that, as you said, is not a matter of repair, but it's basically
management. At that point, yeah.
Yeah. How about motor vehicle safety? We were talking a little bit about that. How to wear your seatbelts. How do people find out about those kinds of things? Is it readily available, you'd say?
Well, it's readily available, and it's almost cultural common knowledge. I mean, we all know the right way to put on our seatbelt because, number one, it's in the owner's manual. It's always in the manufacturer specifications. We all know the right way to do it. The tendency is people, we do things to make us comfortable. We get lazy, whatever the reasons may be.
And we're distracted quite often.
We're distracted. You know, the level of distraction in automobiles is unreal. But just wearing your seatbelt, as a paramedic, I've come on scenes where I've thought there would be a horrible devastation, people dead everywhere, and I've looked in the passenger compartment, and everyone's alive because they were wearing their seatbelts.
Wow.
They were wearing them correctly.
Wow. That's an amazing statement,
yeah.
Testimonial right there.
Yeah, and I've come up on scenes, too, where I said, this doesn't look bad. This is a fairly benign accident, and the devastation has been unreal.
Tell me about... There, when we talk about driving, obviously we've got a range of people driving mm-hmm. from teens to quite a bit older individuals. Would you say that education on both ends of the spectrum there is a key point? I mean, driver education, both for mm-hmm. the teens and for the older adults?
Continuing education. We never stop learning. And because the things that we face and what we deal with in cars is changing. So we need to be constantly educated. I mean, cars are rolling computer centers now. It used to be if you had a push-button radio in your car, you were high-tech. So continually educating people on the dangers of distracted driving, of tired driving, right up there with drunk driving. So educating across the full spectrum, whether it's young people or old alike, getting that awareness out there, letting people know the dangers that exist so they can prevent them.
How about things like violence prevention? Obviously, I know that the CDC has their division. Within their division for injury prevention and control, there's a smaller division called the Division of Violence Prevention. And that's their mission, to try to prevent violence. And it's a serious public health problem in the United States, both from infants to the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, violence So what do we need to know, and what should we be doing about either domestic violence or violence in general?
I mean, it's such a complex issue because there's so many aspects of violence. I mean, the majority of violent injuries occur in the home. I tell my students and people I talk to about injury prevention, you're going to have that feeling. I call it the roller coaster feeling. It's like feeling in the pit of your gut, your instinct saying something's not right. You get it when you're in a roller coaster and you're going over the top, and your instincts say, hey, get out of here. You don't belong here, but we do it anyway. And prevention a lot of time is listening to those instincts. You're going to be someplace, or with younger people, I tell them, you know, you're going to be with someone, they're going to be doing something that you know they shouldn't be. And your roller coaster feeling is going to kick in. Learn to listen to that feeling. Keep away from those situations. You know, violence in the home, those domestic issues are pretty complex, and addressing those as far as preventative measures, you know, getting away from the violent situation is the best prevention there.
Right, and clearly this is not something that you as a trauma coordinator necessarily have to take on, but there are violence prevention programs in schools and in communities throughout the country trying to make a dent in domestic violence issues.
There are multiple groups here in Syracuse that are working with the grassroots organizations, working in the community with young people to not only help after a violent act, but to capture young people before they get sucked into situations and lifestyles that would lead to violent crime or violent injury. There's a number of them here. They do really wonderful work. Upstate Medical Center is working on supporting them and, you know, avoiding, especially, you know, gun and knife violence, because that's really the tragic one when you see young people, all that potential snuffed out from that type of a violent crime.
Right, I agree. And you see the sequelae, you see the problems that arise from it. So let's say under the worst circumstances, an injury occurs in someone's life. What's the best advice do you give to either a parent or a friend of someone who's been injured? What do they do? What should they do?
There again, it comes to instincts. And I always tell parents, no one knows your kid like you know your kid. And if something in your brain or in your heart says something's not right, they're hurt, get them to the hospital. Do not pass go. Just get them here. The Children's Hospital, this is the only children's ED in the area. They specialize in pediatric injury and healthcare. Get them here to us. If you're really concerned, call 911. Get an ambulance there, because if something bad happens in the vehicle on the way to the hospital, you can't do anything about it behind the wheel. And you don't have the equipment that a paramedic would. So if when in doubt, overkill. Get them to the hospital, and I call it the $1 million peace of mind. We spend $1 million, find out everything's okay, peace of mind. We spend $1 million and find out something's wrong, we prevented it and got to it early, good, peace of mind. So
I think that's incredible advice, very important advice. And Steve, it's very important for our community to know that we have a level one trauma unit here.
Pediatric and adult both, and we're one of the few segregated pediatric EDs in the state. And the staff and physicians there are all specially trained. They're all incredible at what they do. I mean, I live in Utica, New York, and my little kid was hurt, I'd bring him to Syracuse.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for everything you do, Steve Atkinson, trauma coordinator for our Upstate Trauma Service. Thanks so much for telling us about all of this, and hopefully we'll learn a little bit better how to prevent these kinds of injuries. We have to take another short break, but there's more HealthLink on air ahead, so please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.